Welcome to another episode of Quest Youth Radio, which is the best youth radio, better known in the past as Quest Community Vibrations. Well, today we feature Tamir Davis, better known as the Black Librarian. Now, he'll give us a brief history of affirmative action in the U.S. And why, you may ask, are we talking about the affirmative action, brief history of it? Because of the recent court decision handed down by the United States Supreme Court, we thought that it would make a very good choice for a topic. Well, let me just be honest. I thought we need to talk about this. You know, we live in a society where people are complacent. They've been long, you know, they've been fed and now they're sleeping and they just don't know what's going on. So let me begin by giving an intro and introducing our guest, the Black Librarian. Music is like poetry and has a message, and history like a diamond shines clear to the truth. You see, words have meanings that we can comprehend like definitions, and news can show us a chain of events that we may not always understand. Now, this is the main point of having a show focusing on affirmative action. I'm asking each and every one of you to pull back your musical curtain to see and hear the contributions of our diaspora, and you're sure to find our Quest moment, where we attempt to make waves, indeed, vibrations. So thank you once again for joining us to hear a different perspective of our community. Now, I want to start by, first of all, good morning, Mr. Davis Tamir, the Black Librarian. How are you, and are you there? I know you are.
Yes. How are you doing, sir? Great to be back on Quest Youth Radio.
Today is a little bit different because we're featuring you as our main guest. I want to start out by letting people know that we do have a format that we go by. Now, today I chose one segment from our format, which is Chains of Events. And when we talk about a chain of events, we go back into history. Now, Chains of Events is an interpretation of the news as it affects the minority community from the alloys of every city that's just like Newark in the United States. It's a report on events, politics, education, law, business, religion, and science. And today, I'd like to say that the focus is going to be on education, politics, and a little bit of law. Chains of Events reveals the interpretation of one event to another so that you, now I'm talking to the audience out there, so that you'll know what's happening. So many people in context don't know what affirmative action is, right? Now, in simple terms, affirmative action is a program of positive action undertaken with conviction and effect to overcome the present effects of past practices, past policies, past barriers of equal employment opportunity. And I guess it's meant to achieve a full and fair participation of women, minorities, and individuals with disabilities. You know, now, to give you an example, affirmative action includes training programs, outreach efforts, and other positive steps. These procedures should be incorporated into the company's written personnel policies. And employers with written affirmative action programs must implement them and keep them on file and up to date. Now, when we look into the details, as they say, the devil's always in the details, right? We want to know. We want to know. Presently, you know what you know. Let me go straight, and I'm gonna shoot from the hip in a moment, right? And talk about some more details about affirmative action, and specifically, you know, the ramifications. What effects has this affirmative action decision? What will it affect? Right. But before I go there, I'm asking the Black Librarian to give us a brief history of what affirmative action is and how it came about. I know that's a big pill to swallow, but
I try to do it as best I can. The
okay,
term affirmative action was first used in the United States in Executive Order Number 10925, signed by President F. Kennedy on March 6, 1961, which included a provision that government contractors take affirmative action to ensure the applicants are employed and employees are treated fairly during employment without regard to their race, creed, color, or national origin. Right? It was used to promote actions that achieve non-discrimination. In 1965, President Lyndon B. Johnson issued Executive Order 11246, which required government employers to hire without regard to race, religion, and national origin, and take affirmative action to ensure that applicants are employed, that and employees are treated fairly without regard to race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 prohibited discrimination on the basis of religion, sex, or national origin. Neither executive order nor the Civil Rights Act authorized group preferences. Affirmative action is intended to promote these opportunities to define minority groups within a society to give them equal access to that of the majority population. And as we well know, the African Americans or blacks at one time, we would call blacks, or sometimes Negro. We were seen at one point, based on the foundation of the country, based on the slaveocracy in America, we were seen as property. And being seen as property, and most oftentimes those people of property did not have a great opportunity for advances, especially with education. Now, there's a couple of shows back that we had on Quest Youth Radio where we talked about David Walker's appeal. And David Walker was a person in David Walker's appeal. This is going to 1800s. David Walker's appeal talked about how blacks need to be treated and what was needed to move forward. And that particular document, that pamphlet was seen as very subversive. It was seen as completely controversial. If a slave was actually caught reading that particular document or knowing how to read, that slave in most oftentimes was killed.
Okay, wait a minute. Could you update us? And I apologize for having to interrupt you on your role, but just update us on who his name, David Walker?
Yeah, David Walker.
Okay, now
David
who was
Walker,
he?
David Walker was an individual, an abolitionist, born September 28, 1796, and passed away August 6, 1830. He was an American abolitionist, writer, and anti-slavery activist. And he fought fought and died to allow African-Americans to be free. Because he was a person that was a writer and a reader and a bit sagacious, and he actually advocated to make sure that blacks had certain rights. So being born, his mother was free, and his father, who died before his birth, had been enslaved. Since American law embraced the principle of propter quod ventrem, which literally means that which brought forth allows throughout the womb, Walker inherited his mother's status of being a free person. So he had certain accesses and certain things that he was able to do. But
okay,
his quest, the Freeman's Journal, actually came out of that. So Freeman's Journal, black writers had gotten together, John Rusbaum and Sharon Carnes got together, wrote the first publication outside of David Walker's appeal. But David Walker was talking about challenging the state of the slaveocracy in the Americas, making sure that blacks were enfranchised. One thing that made it easier for him, although he did suffer a lot, was the fact that he was born free based on coming from his mother's womb, who was free, from North Carolina. So he was free. But he began to start challenging that system, the slaveocracy system, and mentioning the importance of people being free. So in many instances, many slaves were not able to read. They went on, you know, the word's mouth, the Bible, you know, people actually teaching and showing them. And most slave masters didn't want us to read. So we go back that far back. But and moving forward, because of the fact that blacks was not allowed to develop a lot of skill sets, they were not able to read, they were not able to move forward with their families, they were part of the slaveocracy system, we had to find a way of fighting. And many blacks that fought died, because that was a war. You know, it was a war before the Civil War to make sure that slavery was stopped.
Okay, so you make okay now to let you make the connection to what you were saying, if I can get you back on track somehow, because you use him as an example. So could you please make the connection so that people will know exactly what your point that you're making?
Basically, the point that I'm making is the 14th Amendment deals with the equal protection of the law. If you were a slave, you were property. You wasn't considered equal protection under the law, right? And so, the blacks that were disenfranchised, and moving fast forward in the 1964 Civil Rights Act, for centuries we were disenfranchised. A lot of blacks didn't have access. Many blacks didn't have access. We were considered property. So to correct some of those major wrongs during the Civil Rights Movement, it was important to make sure many blacks get access, equal access, the same as access as white folks or other folks who were able to go, able to go to school. So that's gave birth to the Affirmative Action Agreement, because we were a group of people who was disenfranchised based on our race, color, and national origin.
Okay.
And so now,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yes, So these executive orders number 10925, executive order 11246, those particular orders in the Civil Rights Act was put in place to correct those wrongs of past discrimination, persecution, and or exploitation by the ruling class and the culture, and to address those existing discriminations that had taken place.
Okay. Now, about a week or so ago now, the United States Supreme Court ruled against the programs, the affirmative action programs specifically dealing with colleges, saying that the majority opinion written by Chief Justice John Roberts, that the system in place lacks sufficiently focused and measurable objectives warning the use of race, unavoidably employ race in a negative manner, involve racial stereotyping, and a lack of meaningful endpoints. Now, we turn to the Supreme Court decision that struck down affirmative action and removed racial preferences from the college admissions process. The implications of that decision may extend beyond higher education, and the new ruling could stifle companies' ability to consider racial diversity in hiring. Your response, sir.
And you brought out a very important question, a very important point, because it not only dealt with the ability to go to school, but it also created the ability for blacks to become contractors. If you look at what happened with Mayor Jackson down in Atlanta, a lot of blacks became millionaires and were able to reach that status based on the building of the airport. So black contractors was included as part of the quota, you know, and blacks were able to become rich and were able to become influential and hire their own, so on and so forth, like none other before. So it wasn't just the educational component, but we're talking about contractors, where you have to have a certain quota for minorities to be able to get access. Because without that civil rights bill in place of 1964, we wouldn't have been considered in any degree. So it wasn't just about the college admissions. That strikes down college admissions, contractors, black businesses, black business structures, or Latin American businesses and business structures, whereby we're not considered from the outstart.
Right. And so as a result of this recent decision, we are here today having this discussion with the Supreme Court declaring that race cannot be a factor in forcing institutions of higher education to look for new ways to achieve diverse student bodies. And so in my mind, this sounds an alarm in my mind, in my opinion, I mean, it's just mine, right, that they're trying to move the clock back. And that's just my opinion. But from your scholarly viewpoint, I'd like to know what you think.
What I think is that it develops a plethora of different issues. Say, for example, if a person has a certain skill set and may not want to go to school, just because you don't want to go to school, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be necessarily disenfranchised for creating business structures, right? So if you don't want to go to school, but you have the skill sets and know-how to be able to create a company, have employees that can create different types of solutions for major companies, contractors, so on and so forth, stuff like that, you're now out of that loop. You're not being considered. When you're doing contracting and contract bidding, in some instances, minorities need to be included in that process. The question is, would they be overlooked at this point now?
Okay. I'm going to change it. I'm trying to get your focus on higher education and colleges and universities, because these, you know, and I hear what you're saying. Not everybody's going to go to college. I get that. But, you know, I do want to say that at the Ivy League highest point, the Ivy League colleges in the United States specifically, these are gateways to get to the 1% or the top level ranking employment jobs in industry today. And so without a fair pathway to for entry into these colleges,
are we talking about it? Okay, I'm sorry. I got to let you finish making your point. I apologize.
Yeah, well, without a fair entryway into colleges like that, you know, because prior to this affirmative action decision back in the 60s, they weren't letting black people into their schools unless they were janitors or whatever.
And you're right, but what happens is when we begin to look at this in its totality, that positive action that was needed was necessary. The same question in South Africa during the apartheid. They had to create positive actions, and the positive actions didn't come until after 1994 when certain people were in place, Mandela, so on and so forth. So we had to look at this from a very collective global perspective. Discrimination didn't happen just in the discrimination practices. This didn't happen in the United States of America. But let's look at South Africa. The years of fighting, Soweto, so on and so forth, stuff like that. They had to put something for equal equity act in place to make sure the collective of people had contracts, can do this, can do that, so that the country can flourish from a social economic perspective opposed to an elitist perspective. So that means that if minorities can't go to certain colleges to socialize, because in reality you're dealing with developing a social network. So if you're not part of that social network, you're already disenfranchised, whether it be contracts, whether it be education or anything else. You're not going to be considered. But and the education component is one aspect from Harvard, Yale, you know, all those, you know, different Ivy League schools. But many blacks can't afford to go to Ivy League, and some blacks may not want to go to Ivy League schools. But the question is, for those who don't go to Ivy League schools and they create their infrastructures, because America is based on business, the land of business, right? So these African-Americans, these minorities that create business structures will not get contracts based on that act that just had taken place.
And they won't be admitted into these higher education institutions.
Yeah. And so it becomes a major problem. And so how would that impact in the future? Now we're talking about in the present moment, this particular generation of high college students may not be able to get in. But what about their children and their children's children? So
okay.
What happens is
we
basically do is create a permanent underclass by not having access. Because people go to college not to just, like, you know, I talk to a lot of people, they like to go to school online and so on and so forth, stuff like that. But the reason why you really want to go to college, not just for the education, it's for the socialization, to get access, become part of a network. That's what the fraternities and sororities are about, to have access.
Okay, so
it was so bad at one point that's why we have the Divine Nine of black fraternities and sororities, because we wasn't allowed to be in their groups.
Right, but hold on. I need you to hold on for a second, because we talked about what affirmative action is. We talked about the history and how it came about, and we kind of touched on the reason why it's important. But right now, with the situation that we are presently in, what are some solutions that you, and I hadn't discussed this with you in advance, but what are some solutions? How do we push back? How do we combat this recent decision, in your opinion?
I think people collectively should challenge the body of the government that made that decision and give them certain pointers to reconsider that decision.
And how do they do that?
I think people need to advocate. They need to peacefully advocate. They need to go to their churches. They need to go to their mosques. There needs to be all out the same way in which we had recently a Black Lives Matter protest that went on for a couple of years. They need to get in front of it. If Black lives really matter, then you need to get in front of it and protest. Affirmative action came up out of protest, struggle, people dying, mega ever. So many people died to make sure that the wrongs were corrected in terms of how government should engage in governance of the collective of people despite race and creed. So people need to get in front of it and advocate as much as possible to make sure changes are made. It's not going to be an easy process.
Okay, so what do you say, and I'm pressing you now to press this point, but what do you say for someone who's apathetic and just doesn't see any reason to participate in the political process federally or locally? What would you say to them?
What I would say to them is, if this problem affects everybody directly and indirectly, whether you're affluent or not. Because what happens is when you create a situation where people are collectively disenfranchised, they don't have access to jobs, contracts, they don't have access to schools, so on and so forth, then you create a much more intense reality socially for people. Let's look at the 1967 riots across the country. Despite this 1964 Civil Rights Act being passed, look at the Detroit, Newark, all over the country you had riots because people have been hired because they've been collectively disenfranchised.
Okay.
We're supposed to be moving the country forward, not backward. Does that move the country forward? Does it set us back to 1850s?
Mm. Wow. You know, at this time, at this point, I want to thank you. We have 90 seconds left. What I wanted to do was provide a 1-2 punch with yourself and me. I think we successfully provided what affirmative action is, what it was meant to do, how it affected people, and the importance of right now coming up with a solution, getting involved, and mobilizing. Tamir Davis, any last words for today's topic on our show?
It's important to read, and reread, and continue to socialize and share. That's the only way we're going to be collectively growing and challenging each other to be better human beings.
Thank you very much. The Black Librarian, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank Tamir Davis once again. I think we did a great job. What about you? How'd you feel?
I don't know, because you kind of hard on me, big bro.
Oh, no.
You want to make me feel sharp and feel.
No.
I appreciate you.
Were you laughing?
Yeah, appreciate you.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in, and make sure you tune in.
I was born by the river.
Make sure you continue to tune in, right? And a change is going to come. Thank you very much. This is Quest Youth Radio, the best youth radio.
Oh. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too long.